to another episode of the High Ground Podcast, powered by Premier Companies. Good morning, Sal.
Morning.
Hey, we have an esteemed guest with us today, Dr. Karen Plout, who is the Dean of Agriculture at Purdue University, joining us virtually. She is traveling today, so we thank you for your time and joining in with us for a few minutes. So if you want to give us a little background on yourself, we'll kick it over to you.
Sure. My name is Karen Plout. I'm the Dean of the College of Agriculture at Purdue University. I am an animal scientist by training. I got my PhD at Cornell University and came to Purdue in 2010 as the Associate Dean of Research, and then became the Dean in 2017. And I'm so glad to be here with you today for this conversation.
Well, thank you. And we know that there's a lot of controversy, a lot of question marks out there around GMOs. And I was reaching around trying to find someone who could help us. And I'll give quick credit to Mitch Fraser on his title of Demystifying GMOs. And he suggested that you and I make contact, and you've graciously offered your time. So we know that there's a lot of questions out there about GMOs, a lot of misunderstandings, people, a lot of negative connotations with them. And I go back to back to the 70s and 50 years ago, whenever through recombinant DNA extraction of insulin from beef pancreases that were utilized to save people's lives and have for several years now. In 1982, when Humulin became the first GMO insulin available, that, you know, things that are GMO sometimes aren't recognized as GMO, and things that are recognized as GMO are thought to be dangerous when they're really not. So let's kick back to the beginning, and we'll work through the GMO crops and look a little into the future. So help us out with that.
Yeah. Insulin is really a life-saving drug, and the fact that we were able to move it over to using recombinant DNA technology has made a big difference and make sure it's safe and effective for those who use it. And there's a whole series of insulins, as you know, that now are made with that process, which allows really, really good control for those who are type 1 diabetics. So that's been really a wonderful thing. It was widely accepted in the human field quite quickly. When we got to food, nutrition, and plants, it took a little bit longer for that regulatory process. But when you get down to it, scientists have been breeding crops for thousands of years and selecting what they needed. What GMO did was allow them to make progress more quickly. And it really focused in the beginning on things like insects and weed control. So what happened is finally by the 1990s, they started really getting some GMO crops ready. It needed environmental regulations. The whole regulatory environment for those crops had to be developed. And it gets reviewed by FDA and EPA before these crops go on the market. The first one on the market, actually, there were a variety, but BT corn came in very early. That protects corn against an insect. Been very instrumental. And then one of the early ones that I think is interesting that people don't know about is papayas. So papayas were susceptible to what's called papaya ring spot virus. And it just about wiped out the whole papaya industry. And then what happened is they realized they could gene edit papayas so that they would be safe and that they wouldn't get this tobacco ring spot virus. And that, so those GMO papayas have been in place since 1998. GMO corn came out around the same time, maybe a little bit earlier, 1996. And for Indiana farmers, it's made a huge, huge difference because their crops aren't being eaten by insects anymore. So it's allowed us to protect the crops and get much higher yields than before. About 90% of the corn is GMO corn now. Papayas are the same situation. And now there's BT tomatoes, alfalfa, many, many products have that protective gene in them. So that's kind of where it started.
Okay.
I did not realize about papayas. I mean, we think about some of these food products that we all enjoy, and certainly no one has questioned or wondered how we got to the final product. I mean, very few of the fruit crops or grain crops that we eat today in our daily diets are what they were 100 years ago.
That's exactly right. And it's been interesting. And GMO crops or GMO products are in three areas. You have them in the health area, the food area, and then also entertainment. And I thought it might be fun for the listeners to learn about glowfish. So if you go in PetSmart or any other that sell fish, you see all these beautiful bright colors now. Those glowfish are GMO fish. They have actually introduced a gene that allows them to have those new bright colors that brighten up your aquarium. And I thought it might be interesting for your readers to know that's another use of them.
I had no idea.
I didn't either.
No, I had no clue on that. So, and I think that enlightening folks on how many things are GMO are interesting, because it does seem like there's a push out there of advertising of things that aren't GMO, that have never been GMO, that won't be GMO. And and sometimes that's a margin capture for those products. And they are stating a truth. No doubt they're stating a truth, but there would not be a GMO option. And I think that's an interesting play on people's emotion and sometimes, and I say non-education. So
it feels like, Dr. Plowder, it feels like we're like the marketing aspect of this is like, this is a non-GMO coffee cup, or just, you know, we've got certain things that they tag with these. How do we lose, or how do we get behind in the communication? I mean, do you have any insight for us of where kind of we went wrong as an industry to be able to get in front and get the correct message out?
Yeah, we just have to keep talking about it and helping people understand that sometimes, like you said, a non-GMO coffee cup, or they'll talk about non-GMO water. That's a ridiculous statement. And we have to help people understand what it means to be GMO, what it means not to, and try to help the industry make claims that are appropriate. It is perfectly appropriate on something that has the potential to be GMO to put a non-GMO label, because I absolutely believe consumers have a choice and they should be able to pick what products they need. But at the same, or what they want for their family. But at the same time, they've used non-GMO in cases where there never was a GMO. And that's really too bad, because that doesn't help the general public understand what they're eating, or, you know, what products are made of. So I wish I had a good answer for you, but I'm not the marketer, so I don't know how we fix it. But it's kind of a plea to making sure products that are labeled should be labeled according to what they could or couldn't be.
Yep. I think it's important that you said that the consumers do have that choice, and they should have that choice if that choice is available, but let's not make it look more than it really is. So as we jump ahead, we know, a lot of people know, I guess I say that overstatement, but we understand that yields have improved, and that we have much less crop ground in a lot of areas than we used to, but we're still sustaining a food supply. We're still sustaining the world with the grain that we're producing. And a lot of that is contributed specifically to GMO, whether it be protection or tolerance to inclement weather or whatever it might be. Exactly. So how, I mean, going forward, you know, we started with Roundup Ready, or we didn't start with that, but that was one of the early things in Monsanto. Absolutely. Had gotten so demonized for that. But the things that we're doing and the food we're producing is so much more now, with so much less input. I think it's important for someone like yourself and us to promote that. And I don't know if you have other things to say on that, but
yeah. Well, I think one of the things we're starting to see now that's really important, the initial GMO were all really for farmers, for the producer, but we now have products coming on the market, or that are on the market, that also provide healthy alternatives. So, for example, Planiche, which is our high oleic soybean oil, that's much healthier. That came on the markets GMO in 2019. It's been really good for the farmers in Indiana, but it also provides a healthier oil for people to eat or use in cooking. So I think one of the things you're seeing in this area, it's been hard for people to understand when it's farmer-driven, because so many people in today's societies aren't farmers anymore. Now what we're talking about is adding traits that potentially give health benefits. And that's really where gene editing, the newer technologies, are moving towards.
That is really neat. I hadn't thought about that, about how the first generation, I guess we'll call it, or the first, yeah, what I'm familiar with in my career in ag is, it was a benefit for a grower to produce more and be able to raise more and avoid pests, right? I mean, whether that's weeds or insects. But now, the next round, and I may have this wrong, there may be several evolutions, is the right terminology, but the next round will be, it'll benefit the end user, where the end user is benefited by increased production, you know, but now they'll be directly benefited on a personal basis.
That's exactly right. And it's also newer technologies that are coming on now. And I think that's really important to talk about. These are gene editing technologies. And if I may take a little bit of time to just explain the difference with the gene editing technologies versus GMOs for people. So the new gene editing technologies, we're not adding DNA from something else into the crop. We're just removing some of its natural product. So you're usually just taking out a little bit of its genes. So there's nothing new in it. And I think that's really important, because it's allowing us to do a lot of things in a way that should alleviate some of the concerns that people had with GMOs. Having said that, GMOs, the National Academy of Sciences, many scientific groups have shown, and it's now been, you know, more than 30 years on the market, GMOs are safe. So I don't want to give the impression GMOs were none, but we're now into a more advanced technology, which has no potential for some of those side effects. That's really, really exciting and allows us to do some really fun things that have health benefits or flavor benefits or those things that benefit the consumer. So it's an exciting time to be in the industry and see how these technologies can help us. And one of the things we've been talking about the industry, and it gets back to your comment on marketing, we got to talk about what the technology does, not the technology itself. Hmm. How can it make a difference? And I'll give you an example. There is already a gene-edited tomato in Japan that's on the market. And it naturally produces a substance called GABA, which helps with blood pressure. So they removed, there's kind of a stop gene in tomatoes that makes it make only a little bit of this GABA. They actually removed the sequence that stops it, so they didn't add anything new. And now it makes more and more GABA. So these tomatoes potentially have the potential to lower blood pressure. And we know that high blood pressure is a big problem in much of the U.S. as well as other countries. So there's some really nice things that are coming along like that that can make a real difference for people in their health. You know, it starts with high oleic soybean oil, which is GMO technology, and now moving into the gene editing technologies.
That's a lot of there's some irony there that I think in some of those markets in Asia. And if I remember right, they were some of the most hesitant to adopt GMO crops. This goes back into the 90s. But now they're one of the first in this aspect of a health benefit product. So that's neat how times have changed.
Times have changed, and many companies are looking at these technologies. This is Japan, which was a little bit more forward-thinking than some of the other countries, is the one who approved the tomato. So just to be clear on that, but you're absolutely right. Countries that were very much against GMOs understand that gene-edited products potentially provide our consumers lots of good new traits. I heard from a company yesterday at the meeting I was that they're producing a blackberry that it's interesting that has no seeds. So many people don't like the seeds. They did a consumer test, and it's the seeds that many people don't eat blackberries, and blackberries are really healthful berries. And then also it doesn't produce the thorns on the bushes. So when you think about it, many different groups benefit. It's got a high yield. The farmer likes it. Those who pick the berries aren't getting pricked by thorns, and they're eating a healthier berry now. And they taste tested these with 6,000 people, and people really enjoyed them. And that was actually in California, where you think of people not as willing to accept some of these ideas.
Well, that is interesting. And that comes back to the whole marketing piece, too, and the fact that the GMOs are associated with something that was, in our world, on the side of a seed bag. It will be nice to see the positive attributes of these things to be on the grocery store shelves and have a positive link to GMOs instead of the positive link being non-GMO. I think that will drive this message for all of us a long way and to help clear up some of this misunderstanding, because it truly is frustrating to know what good they have done. And the fact that the research out there that talks about how dangerous they are doesn't exist. It's really, really nice to hear about the progress that's being made. Yeah. So do you have other things that you would like to add for us? I know that Purdue University has several things out there that people can click on, and we will certainly provide that at the bottom of the screen for those who watch us on YouTube. But other than directing to that, what else do you have for us on GMOs?
The new technology is going to be called gene editing versus GMO, just for your listeners so that they know they'll see gene edited, which means there's no foreign DNA in there in general. So that's one of the big things to think about. So they'll be able to separate those on the market. But one of the other products that I think is really interesting that many are clamoring for and probably don't realize is GMO is the Impossible Burger. So the Impossible Burger, in order to make it taste like meat, used a GMO product, heme, which is one of the components actually that gives meat its red, bloody flavor, not to be.
You got the right audience. Yeah, you're fine. Yeah. You're fine.
But they made GMO heme, and that's part of what gives Impossible Burger, which is a plant-based burger, its flavor. So it's interesting because they marketed it around the plant, back to our marketing, around the issue that's plant-based, healthier, but it also is a GMO product. So there's lots of different places you start seeing that, and I think that's really important. And I think to think about it in these three aspects of health, crop improvement, and entertainment is kind of where you're seeing these. So it's really become ubiquitous. It's in all sorts of products. And that's why I thought the Glowfish was kind of fun, because I'm sure, unless you know to ask the question, nobody would think of where a Glowfish came from.
No.
So there's lots of different uses as we move forward in our society. And choice is important, and we want people to know that choice is important, but it's also important to realize that these new technologies are regulated carefully and making sure that they are safe products for consumer and also environmentally sound. And that's really, really important as we move forward. So they do all of those testing before these products are in the market. So it's not only Food and Drug Administration, it's also the EPA who evaluates all these products. So I think that's an important thing for your users to know. And when you look at now the lifespan of GMOs, they've been on the market long enough, and we have not seen any health problems related to that. Even the environmental benefits, you need to think about that, because you can use less pesticide if you help with if your crop has some natural resistance. So there's all sorts of things that can be beneficial for them. And we need to keep up the vigilance on these technologies, but allow them to continue to move forward to help Americans have healthier diets. And that's kind of where we're going to.
Yeah. And that's we're fortunate to live in a country in an area where we have so much wealth that we, and choices, right. And that we can,
right.
And that those that can afford it can buy those products that they choose. But it's all discouraging when we see folks that are, the perception becomes wrong and maybe they don't have the money to buy the products that they perceive through marketing is a healthier choice. And that's, you know, that's a, you see people in the world that need the food, that need the extra production, that the food needs to get to, and that there's through marketing, there's been a perception of that's totally, totally opposite of what you said of 30 years worth of proven data and information and testing.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing with these new technologies that's important, because you went to those who can less afford it. I'm actually at the World Food Prize meeting, and they have what's called the Borlaug Dialogue. And one of the things that the new technologies are going to allow developing countries much better access to some of these technologies because they're easier than the previous technologies. And the regulatory environment, because of the safety, won't be quite the same. So we're hoping that in some of these countries that have been against GMOs, that they'll be able to locally produced crops that are really good for feeding their country and their people. Great. So there's lots of optimism around these technology and the health benefits that can happen, and particularly in developing countries, it's around micronutrients and some of those types of things.
Outstanding. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, I just thank you for your time. I think I gave you some links, and I included in there my email address. So if someone has a specific question, they're welcome to email me. And we have lots of scientists that are working on different products and different aspects of this work. So I'd be happy to put them in touch with different people as needed.
And we saw what time that email came through with those links you provided us. So we know you work some long hours too. And we appreciate everything you do.
Yeah, we're so grateful for your time.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, there's your time to spend with us. And just quickly, for those who don't see the link at the bottom, you've given us a couple of links, the options of what are GMOs and Purdue Plant Sciences Initiative. And both those can be found at ag.purdue.edu, and you also provided a link from the FDA how GMO crops impact our world that can be found at www.fda.gov, and we'll have those at greater length as well in detail on the screen. But again, appreciate your time and visiting us while you're traveling and clearly have a busy schedule. So we hope to have you back, and thank you for all the work you're doing and continued good work at Purdue University.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate your time, and it was a pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much. And that's another episode of High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Thank you.